Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush, green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills, combined with the freshest milk available, created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old-world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Craig Benson.
And this is an ad for Ancestral Agave Syrup, the critically acclaimed award-winning syrup that helps gringo bartenders better make margaritas, Negronis,
Lou, hold up,
old
are you just
fashions?
This is how you start your podcast.
What?
It's not an ad for Ancestral Agave Syrup.
Well, of course it is. I'm just cutting costs by not paying writers to make something new. I'm just using an old script.
You pay writers?
Is that some kind of jab?
No, I'm just saying
What are you saying?
Well, look, we've got this amazing syrup that's made in an ancestral manner, cooked down from the sap of the agave, harvested the way these families would to make pulque. It's a quality product. It deserves a quality presentation.
Yeah, okay, hang on. Ancestral agave syrup is made by real families following traditional methods. Unlike the industrial Blue Weber syrup you get everywhere else, Ancestral is cooked down from agua miel harvested from Salmiana in Hidalgo, Mexico. It is the grade A Vermont maple to the sticky diner syrup you've been using for your cocktails. Ingredients matter, both in how your cocktail tastes and how you treat the earth. Ancestral is better for both. Is that good?
Sure. Or maybe confusing instead of cheesy. Look, just visit ancestralagave.com to learn more and to order your world-class agave syrup today.
And we'll call that a wrap. Catch you next ad, Greg.
Hasta pronto?
Ancestral Agave Syrup. Available online at ancestralagave.org and wherever Greg and Lou were able to coerce store owners into carrying it.
I'm Lou Bank.
I'm Rowan Jacobson.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. Hey, Rowan.
Hey.
What you eating?
I wish I was eating some oysters and sushi with a glass of mezcal.
Dude, yeah, because that's what we normally do at 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've been seeing a lot of restaurants expanding their mezcal selections and a lot of events where people are pairing mezcal with food. And so I thought it'd be interesting to do an episode, because these really are meant for Gringex bartenders, do an episode where I took some quotes from people who have been playing in that area
and share those with the people who are running the restaurants and the bars that serve mezcal, so that they maybe it gives them some additional thoughts.
Yeah, you know, and this is, I think that's good, because this is going to be a controversial episode, but I see a lot of bad pairings out there.
Oh, bad pairing. Well, God, what do we start bad, or are you going to be critical? You can't be critical of the people who I got quotes from. That would mess me. They never give me a quote again, Rowan.
Well, why don't I just, should I start, or do you want to start? And then I'll just be quiet if I think it's a terrible idea.
Well, the way I want to start is with this quote from Lainey Bayless from Topolobampo here in Chicago. Because I think she has an interesting point. It's just one point, but I think it's an interesting point. So let me run her quote.
So for when we pair agave spirits with dishes in Topolobampo, we do so on actually probably one of my most favorite days of the month, or every 6 weeks that we get to do it, where the chefs present the dishes to us. It's myself, my colleague Juliana, as well as all the other chefs kind of around in the building, anyone that's excited by this. So they're able to present the dishes to us, talk about the flavor profile, what they really want to highlight in the dish too. That's always something that is unique and something fun to be able to know from them. So we get the dishes from them, and then we dive into tasting them. Of course, you get a little bit of information beforehand from the chefs about what the dish will taste like, but everything always changes when you get the actual flavors in your mouth. So we kind of jump in and taste, especially sauces, obviously, is where a lot of the flavor goes, so that's really where we think first, and then followed by the texture, proteins in the dish, and stuff like that. Particularly, I really love anything herbal, anything with a green sauce, herbs, especially like hoja santa, epazote, anything like that. I really love pairing with Karwinski's. Barril is my favorite, but then biquiche, madriquiche, anything like that.
So, you know, right off bat, what I like about Lainey's quote is she's talking about the broad spectrum of flavors in mezcal, right? So starting with the food and then trying to find a flavor profile in the bottles on her back bar that will work with that flavor profile.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely is broader. Like, you know, people just have this thing in their head, so they think mezcal, oh, Mexican food, you know, whatever Mexican food is. Or, and so they tend to automatically, just like for cultural reasons, like put it together with like the you know, the iconic Oaxacan dishes. And I think it has much broader range than that. In fact, I think it's actually better with other things most of the time. Than your standard moles. But I like what she said about like the herbal flavors, because that's one of the things that has just like jumped out at me when I started tasting mezcal was all those green, you know, vegetal notes that are so beautiful in it. So I think those are, yeah, kind of what you want to like be looking at in pairings.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I got another quote here from Francisco Tapia, the bar manager at Taco Vision in New York City. You know, and he's reinforcing what Lainey says. Let me just run that quote.
Obviously, mezcal has different flavors, different aromas, different textures. It is hard when you come to pairing food. But what grows together, goes together.
So, you know, like I think what Francisco is doing here, like reinforcing Lainey, but also saying something that I hear a lot, what grows together goes together.
Yeah. You know, like it's like terroir, right? Like, and sometimes it's true, but not always. Like, you know, like in France, people are always like, this wine from this region, it has to go with these regional foods. And I've found that sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. But it does, like, I don't know, like agave and cactus, right? So,
well, you know, it's like, it's funny where my head goes with that. The thing that always, you know, and every palate's different, but speaks to something that you were saying earlier is I'll see an awful lot of farms where they're growing agave and they're growing chiles. And the last thing in the world that I want to eat when I am drinking agave spirits is something spicy.
Yeah, so that's what I was kind of dancing around. Like, it's the worst combo. Like, if you don't want to taste your mezcal, like, all those, like, subtle, beautiful notes, just, yeah, throw a really spicy sauce down your throat.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's jump to this quote I've got from Grace Gonzalez. She's a third generation master distiller for Tequila El Mayor.
Usually I highly recommend people to just be adventurous and try however they feel like doing it, because it's completely different, my tasting buds or the way that my palate reacts than anyone else. But if somebody asks for my recommendation, usually I love the blancos with foods that are very light on the palate. So especially El Mayor Blanco, I really like it with sushi, sashimi, ceviche, something that it's not going to be like overpowering.
Yeah, I'm on board 100%. You don't need a whole lot of sauce, actually. Like, the mezcal almost is the sauce because it has all those complex notes in it already. So yeah, like ceviche, sushi, like seafood, like very simple seafood or grilled vegetables. I think that is the sweet spot for sure.
Yeah, and well, I think, you know, as you were suggesting, sometimes what grows together goes together. Sometimes it doesn't. I think here you've got a case where it's very rare that I see people making mezcal near where they would fish.
Right. I know. You see, this is like, it's not what, you know, what swims together wins together. It's, you know, like this thing that like it's coming from a completely different part of the world, but they're really beautiful together. I actually just did, we did this tasting up in Vermont, seven different kinds of oysters, different varieties of oysters from all over the country with seven different mezcals. And it was really fun.
Okay. So tell me more about that. What was your theory going into that pairing?
So I've done a lot of oyster pairings, like, because I wrote a couple books about oysters. Oysters are really, they're really different. There's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of varieties out there. Back to the idea of terroir. They'll just take on different flavors from the waters they're in because they're filter feeders. Because of that, like, it's really nice to put a bunch of different oysters on a plate with people so that they can really see those differences. Because when you put them side by side, it becomes really obvious. Salty stuff. I think mezcal is also good with salty stuff. So oysters are really salty. So it seems like it would be just a natural pairing. So we tried it and it was, it was amazing. People were really blown away.
You'll invite me to the next one, right?
I will. Do you eat oysters?
Yeah, you know, I do. I make an exception for oysters. And I always felt like I was being bad when I cheated that way, right? Because the whole point to my my diet is reduce the cholesterol. And I always thought oysters had a lot of cholesterol. But
shrimp
somebody...
Yeah, shrimp have a lot, right?
Yeah, shrimp are outrageous. Somebody, it might even have been you, or maybe I read it in one of your books. I like the way you also dismiss. I read a couple of books on oysters. You wrote a couple of the most seminal books on oysters. So I've been eating them more and more. But, you know, the thing that you're, I don't know why I went down that road. I can't remember anymore. But the thing that is like clicking in the back of my head as you're talking about the oysters and the saltiness is, we don't talk a lot about how the water affects the flavor of these agave spirits. And so many of the communities, I mean, obviously, if you've got like a big factory and you're pumping out a ton of stuff, your water is going to be relatively filtered. But so many of these families that I'll buy my favorite bottles from, they're sourcing from local wells, from springs, and you'll have that natural minerality. And unlike the large distilleries that are making, you know, just a ton of whiskey, let's say, where they're pulling it off of the still at 80, 90% ABV and then watering it down with something that's filtered water. Here, like, you'll get something that's distilled to maybe 60%. So now you're 40% that same water source that's going to be salty, that's going to be, right, minerally. And then they'll, instead of cutting it with water, they'll oftentimes cut it with the heads or tails. So there again, you're still, like, the heads and tails of the distillation. So there again, you're still, I guess you're not cutting with heads, but you know what I mean. You're mixing.
Yeah.
You're still keeping that flavor of the water in there. So, you know,
it's half water.
yeah, it's half water, and it's the kind of water that these oysters would be living in, these fish would be living in.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I agree with you. I think the water is probably a major component of some of these wilder mezcals.
Yeah. So, okay. So the next quote I want to run is from Chef Mariana Alvarado Garcia of Mas Azul. And she does pop-ups in Las Vegas, was featured on Netflix's Taco Chronicles. And she suggests something that might also put people off.
There's a rare delicacy in Mexico that drives me crazy. Good crazy. It's kind of weird because I'm talking about insects. Ants, in a specific, chicatana ants. You can make a quick salsa in a molcajete with some chile de árbol and a couple of tomatoes, aromatics, and a handful of chicatanas. Spread that into a fresh bolita heirloom corn tortilla, also indigenous of Oaxaca, while sipping on pechuga. And life is where it's supposed to be.
So, you know, it's funny. She's saying that the ants might put us off. I'm fine with the, actually, I love the ants, because that to me is the ant eggs in particular, the Eskimo egg, right? Mm-hmm. Right? That to me is going back to the whole idea of the fish and the sushi and the roe and, right? Mm-hmm. But man, once she threw that chili arbol on, she lost me.
Yeah, but I think you're right on, you know, ants, eggs, oyster, you're talking stuff, again, it's salty, but it's also really high in umami.
Yep.
And I think maybe that's what we've been getting at with a lot of these recommendations, is like mezcal pairs quite well with umami, which is good because like wine doesn't, you know, so.
Wine doesn't.
Wine, I feel like always fails with, like, if you think about a really high umami food, like anchovies or something, like that's tough for wine. Like people usually recommend some super high acid white, but that's just like, that's almost like surrendering, right? Like, just like throw some lemon juice at it, you know, to like make the problem go away.
Oh, see, I don't drink wine. I get angry at grapes, Rowan.
Yeah.
I feel like they get too much attention and agave doesn't get enough. So I get angry at grapes. So I don't drink wine.
They do get too much attention. Yeah. Agave has all the like more variables at play in terms of the production of it and all the terroir factors, and it should be the other wine, and it's becoming, I think.
Yeah, though after this quote, neither of us is going to be invited on a wine enthusiast podcast anymore.
Yeah, I think that's safe.
Yeah. Okay. So then let's roll over to my friend Kate Auca and Chef Adrian Villarreal of Tohono in San Diego. They sent this note in about things to avoid.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like when drinking agave spirits and stuff, I like to stay away from stuff that's overly spicy or too spicy. I really want, you know, the flavors of the mezcals to be present, and I don't want that to be, you know, covered up by super spicy food.
Yeah, especially like you have this super, super elaborate and artisanal product, and then you just add like just some random habanero spice to it, or like just, you know, like a very generic sauce. Yeah. Pretty much beats the purpose, I think.
Yeah.
Well,
everybody's on the same page here. It's, I feel like, you know, great minds.
Yeah, you know, it's funny though. I've got I think I did an episode ages ago with my former co-host Chava Peribon, and Chava loves the spicy food with the mezcal, which, you know, suggests to me that maybe there's also a difference in how your palate is formed. If you grow up eating the spicy food and drinking these drinks, if you literally do it, you know, when you're a teenager, maybe it becomes something that to you and I is unpleasant. But, you know, I used to love eating McDonald's as a kid, and you take somebody that didn't grow up with McDonald's and you'd take them there, and they're not going to like that experience at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think for sure where you're coming from influences your palate hugely. But you know that there's this other thing that is so, so good with spicy food. And it's called beer. Like anytime, I'm like, yeah, I can try to, I can enjoy a sip of mezcal with my, like, you know, like blow your head off tacos, but there's also beer. So like, talk me out of my beer, you know, I think like, that's going to be a tough one.
God. Okay. No. I, this is great. So every once in a while when I'll have oysters, they'll bring me, and I feel like I shouldn't do this, so I don't. They'll bring me like the spicy stuff to put on the oyster. Mm-hmm. And I don't do that for the same reason that I don't like the spicy food with the mezcal. I want to taste the oyster, particularly since, you know, having conversations with you, I feel like it's my obligation to honor that oyster by eating it in its, you know, in its natural state. So I'm wondering, is that when you drink beer with your oysters, when you do put the spicy stuff on?
I actually think beer is great with oysters always too.
Always spicy or not? I mean, spicy.
Well, salty. Yeah. Beer and salt, you know, another classic. So we haven't touched on the thing that is, that mezcal is absolutely best with yet.
Oh,
you know the answer.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, hang on to it. No. Hang on to it. I do think I know where you're going with this.
All right.
Park it, because I have a shocker at the end that I didn't share with you.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, we'll see. A trick ending.
We'll see what's inside. Okay. Yeah.
So instead of that, let's go to Mescalero Jorge Torres of Laguna de Sanchez, Nuevo León. He's got this take.
Pues aquí siempre lo usamos cuando vienen los clientes así.
When we receive people or clients, usually on weekends, we always prepare something like a chicken, a carnita asada, or a snack. That's how they make it tasty, snacking and having a few copitas. But I drink it like this, without food or anything, just by itself. I like it natural without stirring anything into it. What I always like is a lime with salt. That's all I like. It's delicious.
There you go. Boom. You stole my thunder.
Well, were you going to go lime or were you going to go orange?
I was going to go neat with nothing.
Oh, well, yes. Okay. So you weren't headed the direction that I was. Yeah. And you know, and honestly, that really is like, I'll drink before or I'll drink after. And you know, like somebody's serving me food and they're serving me spirits. And this happens actually when I'm at some of my favorite Mescalero's places, I'm not going to turn down the drink.
Right.
But it always does taste different. Even if it's not spicy food, it always does taste different.
Yeah. It's just so, it's so good. It's so full and complete on its own, you know. I feel like it needs nothing.
Yeah. But you know, so when Jorge asked about lime and, or mentioned lime and salt, right, that sent me down the path of this thing that I see so frequently at mezcalerias, at restaurants that focus on mezcal, where they'll serve you the wedge of orange with a little sal de gusano, the salt that's made with the crushed up gusano, right? They'll serve that on the side of with the drink, and it just comes out. You don't ask for it, right? I'm sure you've seen this.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, yeah.
Well, and it sent me down this path of wondering, okay, so where did that tradition come from? Where did it start? And I started asking around, and I couldn't find anybody who could remember, like, the first, at least older people, who could remember the first time that they had that.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find any reference to it in books that predated, like, the mid-2000s, all right?
Oh, really? So it's not so old after all. Yeah, I wonder if it's a gringo thing.
Well, so I'm going to run this quote from Eduardo Anales of Santa Catarina, Minas, Oaxaca. And I'm just going to let him tell you.
Bueno, tú sabes que yo tuve que ir a Estados Unidos, ¿no? De migrante.
You know, I had to go to the United States as a migrant. When I was there, I realized that much of the trade they do there is done by developing concepts to differentiate the products in the market. Then, when I returned, I realized that it was already becoming popular for people to consume mezcal with lime and salt. Any salt. It didn't have to be the salt we use now with oranges.
No tenía que ser la sal que actualmente usamos para el mezcal con las naranjas. Ese, para mí era uno de las primeras cosas que teníamos que atender porque...
For me, that was one of the first things we had to take care of because people were adopting mezcal as if it were tequila. People were consuming it that way. I have a little store where I sell my mezcales in San Bartolo, Coyotepec. In that store, people were already asking for it with salt and lime. And when I returned, I said, no, we must generate a different idea. First, because mezcal should not be drunk with lime. Because this is very acidic, and it was very inappropriate for people to drink such a strong drink as we sell it, or as mezcal should be drunk, and that they should be drinking those mezcales with lime.
Tan fuerte como nosotros la vendemos, o como se debe de tomar el mezcal, que siempre lo hemos vendido así, y que tuviese que estar consumiendo ese, esos mezcales con limón.
And so it was that for a year, I began to make tests with people who came to that little store in San Bartolo. And the same people opted for different fruits. Depending on the season, there are plums, mangoes, bananas, jicamas, apples. And around November, there starts to be a very tasty tangerine. And that came in first place.
Una mandarina, que es muy rica. Y esa quedó en primer lugar. La gente le gustó muchísimo con mandarina.
In second place was the orange, and in third place was the pineapple, which Oaxaca also produces a lot of.
Oaxaca se produce piña.
But the tangerine, which was in the first place, is not available all year round. It is only seasonal. And what is available all year round is the orange. That's why the orange stayed. And for a long time, people went to that little store because I served mezcal with oranges. The orange is important because it is not as acidic as lime. It was a snack, I want to clarify. It is not something to do mezcal tastings, but for the people who went and drank mezcal. And as a snack, I served them their oranges, and I still do.
Y también se me vino a la mente de mi memoria de niño, ¿no? Yo cuando fui niño.
It also came to my mind a childhood memory. When I was a child, there were not all the candies and sweets that there are today. So we ate fruits and always accompanied them with chili salt and maguey worms. It was a very typical thing here during my times. The children would collect their worms and the mother would prepare them with chili salt. I thought of taking advantage of this memory, which most people who drink mezcal have, since it was also part of their childhood. And when I put it with gusanito salt, people loved it.
Cuando se puso con la sal de gusanito, pues a la gente le gustó. Y ya se fue quedando hasta el 2005.
In 2005, my dad and I participated in the Mezcal Fair, and the man who was Under Secretary of Economy at that time asked us to bring mezcales to see how we drank mezcal in Oaxaca. And I brought my mezcales, oranges and warm salt. He found it very interesting, and so he took it to the hotels, and a campaign was made to drink mezcal. And the oranges and salt with worms were part of the campaign. And so it remained as part of the history of this drink.
Se llevó ahí y ahí se quedó como parte de su de la historia de esta bebida. Pero la realidad.
But the reality is that it is meant as a snack, not for tasting or anything like that.
Okay, so there is Lalo, you know, and hey, he's my hero. He's saying he's the guy who started this. I have looked. I've had conversations with other mezcaleros. Nobody seems to remember this, but nobody has presented to me any evidence that contradicts this. It feels to me like there's an awful lot of restaurants and bars that should be giving him royalties for creating this combination that now is considered traditional.
Yeah, and it's so funny how often traditions actually are like that. I was just somebody not as long ago as you think who like started it, and then everybody picked up on it, and no one realized like where it was coming from. Yeah, it's not a bad idea. Again, you know, it's the saltiness, right? And the umami, like the sal de gusano's got this umami factor too.
And vitamin
C. It's pretty
C.
good.
Yeah.
And the vitamin C, right? Of the orange. But yeah, like, do you need, you know, like, you know, what's actually, I think, like, we ended up doing this a couple times, and then I ended up doing more. Like, you'll often see when you're drinking with in a bar or with mezcaleros, they'll just have like just some like pumpkin seeds or other like toasted seeds or a little bug. Well, whether it's seeds or bugs, you know, it's kind of the same. Just a tiny bit of that is, I think, really, really good. That's kind of the sweet spot.
Yeah, you got all excited about those pumpkin seeds that we picked up in Puebla.
I think it was best Puebla. Pumpkin seeds ever. Yeah, like I've never had pumpkin seeds that good.
Oh yeah, you know, I'm headed down to Mexico this weekend, and I'm going to be visiting this woman who makes my favorite pumpkin seeds. So I'll get some of those and send them to you, along with a chocolate bar I have sitting here for you as well. But that also is, as I say, chocolate also reminds me that is one of the things that I love to eat when I am drinking agave spirits. And I find that most agave spirits I love, I can identify something within the flavor profile or sometimes the aroma that reminds me of something about chocolate or cacao.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't tried that, but it makes sense to me on paper.
wait. So when we were traveling and we had all that chocolate, we didn't eat any chocolate while we were drinking?
I don't think we were eating that chocolate in the car at like 8 a.m. Surprisingly, we weren't drinking at 8 a.m.
I was trying to act like a professional.
Right.
Now, I've given that up now.
Yeah, like I saw right through that.
Well, I think then that means that we have to put something on the calendar to have some chocolate and agave spirits together, and we'll get some pumpkin seeds and we'll make a whole festival out of it.
That sounds, the chocolate and agave festival, that could totally happen.
Chocolate and agave festival. I'm thinking August in Chicago. What are you thinking, Rowan?
I was thinking midwinter in Mexico, but
sounds better.
August in Chicago is good too.
Yeah, okay. No. We'll get together with Anna at the Chocolate Museum in Mexico City, and we'll set it up.
There you go. Yeah,
I'll bet she'd totally do that. I'm going to be seeing her Saturday. Okay, so this is the save
set
the date.
It
it's the save All the right. date. We're doing first week of January.
Yeah, that works for me.
Okay, cool. I'll nail
worst
that
week
down.
Of the year in Vermont.
First week of year in Vermont?
Worst week of the year in Vermont.
Oh, worst week. I thought you were saying move it to Vermont instead. Okay.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah. I like that. Okay. Well, yeah, I'm going to set that up, and then I'll send you the invitation, and we'll start pulling some fun people in.
I'm in.
Sounds great. Hey, Rowan, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Agave Road Trip. I'll catch you next episode.
I'm on all of them now?
Yes.
Right.
Hasta pronto. You've been listening to Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. We're blessed with sound engineering by Roy Sierra and a theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Marco Ricos. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, well, I'm sure you'll let us know that too. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Agave Road Trip. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc. Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization using the power of educational storytelling about food to build a more equitable, resilient food system. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network might lead you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If you drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, drive responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive, do not walk either. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to stretch every 30 minutes. If you stretch every 30 minutes, please stay within your defined stressing capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you don't have a doctor, maybe Dr. Ryan Acock, the Cocktail MD, can help you out. Thanks for listening.
Agave Road Trip out.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food. including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.